Kalo Falava, you're listening to Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific, Wau Okoroe Hawkins. Coming up...
It doesn't seem to have changed much by way of procedures and control situations here in Fiji.
Fiji health authorities are confident they've contained Omicron variant cases.
Last Saturday we recorded our fourth death, and now it's fifth death, COVID-19 related death.
The CNMI is undergoing 14 days of heightened restrictions to try and arrest a surge in COVID cases. And
the fact of the matter is the inundations have become much more regular.
We check in on the Marshalls and FSM, where there have been 3 days of ocean flooding. Health authorities in Fiji remain confident that cases of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 have been contained in managed isolation. Two people who arrived into the country from Nigeria last month tested positive for the variant in a border quarantine facility. Our correspondent in Fiji, Lide Movono, is with me. Bula Lide, what's the latest we know at this point?
Well, the latest that we know is that of the people who had come in on a Fiji Airways flight from Hong Kong on the 25th of November, two people who had tested positive upon entry during mandatory quarantine protocols are now confirmed to be carrying the Omicron variant. And this, of course, was after sample was sent to Melbourne for genomic sequencing.
Right. And so has that kicked into gear some other processes from government and from health authorities?
It doesn't seem to have changed much by way of procedures and control situations here in Fiji. As it stands, all we know is that they were restricted to quarantine because that entire flight was majority passengers coming in from what we're calling it non-travel partner countries. They were made to quarantine for 10 days right away. And of course, the two who are now confirmed to be carrying Omicron were among those who had been quarantined. There were four people on that flight who came from partner countries who didn't have to quarantine. But what we're being told by the government as of last night and more so today is that not the crew and not the four from travel partner countries were quarantined, but they've since tested negative twice. It hasn't kicked in any sort of escalation, which is what we had been expecting, considering that we opened our borders just over a week ago now. And this week in particular, we're getting in flights from even more destinations than we were flying over the past 2 years of this pandemic. And so it hasn't changed much, but there is a heightened sense of surveillance in the community. The Ministry of Health has kicked back up their protocols or COVID-safe protocols, awareness programs, and the social media is again rife with reminders to people that it's masking up and social distancing and remaining within your bubble that will take us through without need of a lockdown.
Right. And so the people who are confirmed with the Omicron variant, they're just going to stay in quarantine and be observed and go through all of the time that they need to finish in there and the negative tests and all that, are they?
That might be a bit of a concerning situation, Koroi. What we're told is that they were quarantining for 10 days, but after it was confirmed that they were carrying the Omicron variant, they were given an extended period of only 14 days. And if you will remember, before the Delta variant or in the early days of the Delta variant, there were some countries that were administering a 21 days quarantine, you know, to err on the side of caution. But that does not seem to be the case here. And in fact, this morning, the Attorney General was talking about confidence that they have in the current public health system and in the upgrade of public health services to be able to cater to another outbreak. So these people who came on that flight from Hong Kong on the 25th of November will complete quarantine in the next couple of days and will be out in the community.
Wow, that does seem a bit risky. But well, thanks so much for the update. We'll keep in touch. And maybe briefly while I have you, how have the visitors coming through? Have some started reaching Suva and other places near you?
As soon as our borders opened on the 1st of December, people were able to travel all over Viti Levu, barring, of course, those towns and those establishments that do not have CFC certification. So CFC, of course, is our KFEG commitment program where people must be vaccinated fully to be working in or living in an establishment or a close community, and also be trained by Tourism TG and other arms of the government to be able to practice COVID-safe behavior. And so people did come all the way to Suva, and in fact, some flew all the way to as far as Savu Savu and Saveuni, as I saw in the reports over the next few days. And the Tourism Fiji CEO, Brent Hill, told me yesterday afternoon that over the next couple of weeks, our Tourism Fiji work will be centered around reminding people that there is more to Fiji than just Viti Levu or just the western division of the country. So it looks like we're almost completely back to normal, barring, of course, the now more complex method of checking into the country and checking into tourism facilities in Fiji.
The CNMI is undergoing 14 days of heightened COVID-19 restrictions and a nightly curfew to try and flatten the curve on the latest surge of the virus. This period was declared over the weekend by the CNMI Governor, Ralph DG Torres, after the fifth COVID-19 death was announced amid a resurgence of the virus in the US territory. With me is our CNMI correspondent, Mark Rabago. Kia ora, Mark. So when did this resurgence of COVID-19 cases begin?
So back in October 28, there was some testing in elementary in some schools in the CNMI, and there were three positive cases that were detected. And since then, that was our first local transmission in months. And after that, it just surged. The local COVID-19 cases surged. And now we're the other day we got triple digits, I think 104. And before that, we had 103. So it's we've even exceeded Guam right now when it comes to COVID cases. And last Saturday, we recorded our fourth death. And now it's fifth death, COVID-19 related death. So even the Commonwealth Healthcare Corporation CEO said that the surge is here. There's really a lot of cases, and it's not the end. So everybody's trying to, he is asking everybody to follow the three W's, which is wear a mask, wash your distance, and wash your hands. Sanitized.
Yes.
So we're really in the height of the pandemic right now.
Yes, and is this off the back of some loosening of border restrictions?
What happened was the explanation why we got the transmission is there was a health worker that's from Guam who came to the CNMI. He was an essential worker, so he didn't have to quarantine himself. But he was a little bit negligent when it comes to self-quarantine. So we spread it to a couple of students from the public school system, and that's where I think started. But there's a mysterious sector that the Commonwealth Health Center still don't know where did they get that virus. So, yeah, regardless of where who got it, who brought it here, it's here now. So better contain and prevent any further deaths. So the task force and the Commonwealth Health Center is requesting everybody to get vaccinated. There's still thousands not vaccinated, and also those who have had 6 months after their first shot to get boosters.
Yes, and so some restrictions have been brought in as a result. What are the restrictions?
So because of this rise in cases, and then the CNMI recording its fifth death, Governor Torres, Ralph De Leon Guerrero Torres, imposed restrictions, new restrictions, or reimposed restrictions to stymie the surge in COVID-19 cases. One such restriction is the reimposition of curfew. Curfew is now from 12 a.m. to 4 a.m., and then face masks are required whenever you go indoors. There's also a 50% indoor establishment can only fill in 50% occupancy. So, for instance, if you're a restaurant and you have 100 chairs, 100 seats, you could only accommodate 50 people. So that's pretty much what has happened.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. So for the next 2 weeks, and how are the public reacting to this? Are people taking up the call to get vaccinated and following all regulations? I guess there must have been some adjustments having to be made with businesses and work and the like.
Well, I forgot. Another restriction is non-essential government employees are told not to report to work for the next 2 weeks also. So everybody's, before this, there was a rumor that going around that it's going to happen. So obviously some are still in shock. But they're understanding that these measures have to be done so we could control the surge.
3 days of flooding throughout the Marshall Islands and the Federated States of Micronesia has caused little major damage but will require large-scale cleanups. Some roads around Majuro were down to single-lane traffic on Monday as heavy equipment was brought in to clear rocks and debris left by inrushing tidal water. The flooding, which started Saturday and continued through Monday night, resulted from a combination of ongoing sea level rise, a high tide and strong winds. Joining me is Gift Johnson, our correspondent in the Marshall Islands. Kia ora, Gift. So tell us more about what's been happening.
The last several days we're seeing ocean inundation, not only across the Marshall Islands, but also in many islands in the Federated States of Micronesia. And, these are the inundation, the past several days has been a little bit bigger and worse than the sort of run-of-the-mill inundations that we are seeing much more regularly nowadays. But the fact of the matter is that, compared to like when I first moved out here 35 plus years ago, is that the inundations have become much more regular, and they may just be small, might be, at the high tide period over 3 or 4 days, you get a little wash up on the roads and in causeways and low lying areas. Some people get their backyards flooded. So it's more in the category of nuisance flooding. But the point is, we didn't have 3-4 days of these type of nuisance floods several months of the year. And pretty much the worst, we know that the sort of king tide period for the North Pacific area, for the Marshall Islands anyway, is the January-February period. So, for us to see these things in September, October, November, now even early December, it's still, it's still sort of out of the what you might say is the historical pattern, but maybe now we're seeing has been much changed due to sea level rise and climate change.
As well as the flooding, what other impacts are they having on people's livelihoods, I guess, and day-to-day life?
Well, the main thing, like with what's been going on the last several days with the high tides here in the Marshall Islands and what I see in the Federated States of Micronesia, is that it's just a huge cleanup is needed because you get all the debris and garbage and rocks, and coral and junk that gets carried in by the ocean floods. And so that's a big issue for just having to clean everything up. And then you get saltwater intrusion on plants. And so, there'll be certainly be a serious impact anywhere that there was saltwater coming in. And most places here, people are growing food crops around their houses, whether it's a real garden or just a few things, but it helps to supplement your daily diet, and guaranteed those things are affected by saltwater intrusion. Plants will die or be set back. So yeah, these are big issues for people, particularly the ones who are living a more subsistence way of life on some of these remoter islands.
Definitely. And have you spoken to any experts about this particular these particular events over the last 2 days and what might be causing them?
Yeah, so I spoke with climate researcher who's done quite a lot of work out here. He's based in New Zealand, as it happens. And he says a big thing with what's going on now, the last few days, is that sea level is much higher. And he's just saying it's increasing the frequency and magnitude of these type of inundation events. And that like 30 years ago, the 90s or 80s, something like the high tide that we've been having this week just wouldn't have caused flooding. But because the sea level is up, you know, significantly over time, then we're seeing this confluence of events that cause it, including, you know, you got some storm off in the distance, some wind, and on top of the sea level and the high tide. So this is just, it's for us, we just kind of now get to expect that we're going to see regular inundations. Not bad. They're not really necessarily causing damage. It's more nuisance than anything, but it's a regular event. And the more saltwater intrusion we have, the more, you know, obviously that raises issues about people being able to grow food crops on these small islands.
Definitely. And are you in for much more flooding? Do you know what the forecasters are saying?
As far as I can tell, the indication from the information I see is that the last couple of days were the peak high tide, and from today onward it's going to drop. So that's good news, although we probably will have some inundation very likely tonight, but maybe not as bad as it was the last several days. But then we have the January-February period to look forward to, and you never know. I mean, it some years we get hit with some inundation, some years we don't, but January-February historically are the peak high tides for the Marshall Islands.
Vinaka Gif, and that brings us to the end of Pacific Waves for today. Remember, you can download us free to your device from Spotify, iHeart, or Apple Podcasts. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Tofa Soifuo.